With me is Dr. Michael Barrett. He is the proprietor of TW Antennas. And, of course, we've talked a lot about the TW 2010. And but there's some areas about the TW 2010 I think a lot of folks are... we still get questions, people calling up and saying, what does this mean? Or how does this thing work? You know, we see the picture. And I think the unusual shape of the antenna causes some folks to get a little bit confused as to what it is. Why don't you clarify a little bit for us? How did we come about that shape for that antenna?
Well, Ted, what we wanted was what the intent of the antenna was to build an antenna that would be stealth and would be able to be deployed without a ground radio system. And the design, the modified H design, gave us the opportunity to do that. The antenna is not magic. It is a center-fed vertical dipole. Now, it looks like a giant T on the top and a giant T on the bottom. Some people say, well, Dr. Barrett, it looks like a capital I. Well, that's what it looks like. If you look at the webpage, you see it in person. It is fed, center fed, just like a horizontal wire dipole that you would hang in the trees. And if you open up the switch and array box, we have added coils or inductors to move in and out with a relay network to make the antenna physically longer or shorter based on the band you're working. And the magic is you get the low takeoff angle of a vertical antenna, Ted, while it's down on the ground. It does its best performance either at about 2 to 2.5 feet from off the ground or more than 20 feet in the air. But I haven't noticed any significant performance improvement with it being 20-plus feet in the air, except maybe talking on 10-meter locally. But that was the whole idea, was a stealth antenna, portable, vertical, no radial network, that really performed well with the low takeoff angle.
Well, you know, okay, now let me ask you a question, because I've had people ask this. What about mounting that antenna if you raise the elevation of the antenna? Does it hurt its performance? So some folks have said, well, I can't really set that down in my yard. I'd have to put it on a pole in back of the house or off to the side or something. So if you raise it up 15, 20 feet off the ground, does it hurt the antenna's radiation pattern?
The answer is no with a but. There, if you were always working 10 meters or 12 or 15 meters and you never worked 17 or 20, there would be a height that would be the minimum height to get it off the ground to prevent a bunch of ground absorption. And there's a fellow who wrote a review on EHAM that tells what it is for each frequency. Well, the 14 megahertz is the frequency that most people use. 17 and 20 meters, 18 megahertz, 14 megahertz. With that being the case, we tell people the 20 feet elevation is or more is what we recommend. Now, sometimes, Ted, depending on the angle of your roof, depending on the composition of the roof, whether it's metal roof or a asphalt shingle roof or a tile roof, you may have to go in when you position it and do the tinning process, which involves either pushing the coils together or separating the coils, make some very minute tinning adjustments, but it does not hinder the performance at all to have the thing mounted elevated. But I'll also tell you, you won't get a lot of improved performance by doing that. The main reason I would do it is, for example, my XYL, my wife, she likes them up off the ground. So she prefers antennas on the roof. Now, I understand most XYLs don't, but my wife likes them up out of the way. So that would be a reason I would mount mine elevated rather than on the ground. I have them mounted on the ground. I have them mounted on top of the building. I can't tell any difference at all but for when I talk to folks within, 30, 40, 50 miles of me on 10 meters. And I do notice because, you're going ground wave there as opposed to sky wave.
Well, you know, there's some other properties about this antenna that you've kind of discovered that I think we ought to talk about this a bit, and that is, you've discovered in playing with this antenna that this thing actually works on 2 meters.
It works on 2 meter FM. It works on 2 meter sideband. Obviously, it's omnidirectional. The polarization is it's omnidirectional pattern, but it's really polarized, in my opinion, vertically. So it, even though you can transmit on 144-200 with a flat SWR or virtually flat, it does better as a 2 meter vertical antenna. And I have not done the charts on it or anything, but I believe it has some pretty good gain over just a normal dipole on 2 meters. I've also worked 432 sideband, 70 centimeter sideband, with a very low or virtually flat SWR, and I've worked the 70 centimeter repeaters, 440, 450 megahertz repeaters on FM, and it works well on those. I did note on, people ask me all the time, Ted, what about 6 meters? My experience on 6 meters is it's about a 3-to-1 SWR when you try to use this antenna on 6 meters. So you'd have to have a tuner in your radio or an external tuner to make it work on 6 meters. And again, you're polarized vertically, so that really isn't the best way to work 6 meters vertically if you're talking 6 meter sideband. But I would recommend it for use on 2 and 70 centimeter. So if you want to put it up on the roof and you want to have it there and you want to work the HF bands, 10, 12, 15, 17, 20 meters, and you say, oh my, I really need something to work the 2 meter and 70 centimeter repeaters in the area, you don't have to have an extra antenna. This antenna will work. I've done it myself, and it does quite well. And I also tell you, it does a heck of a job talking 2 meter simplex. 146, 520, and the various simplex channels. I was in Orlando, Florida. I talked all the way to Cocoa Beach on one side, Melbourne, Cocoa Beach, and then went the other way into Tampa, talking 2 meter FM simplex, and it really performed admirably. Now, we don't advertise that. We don't promise people those results when we initially introduce the antenna, but by actually using the antenna, we found out that it does work on those bands, and we can tell people if they try it, they'll find out the same thing.
Well, I guess the thing of it is it is a stealth antenna, and it gives you the ability to hide. You can put it somewhere, and it's like I said before, when I was at Dayton, I walked up to the booth, and I looked at the mural in the background that says, TW Antennas for your DX Adventure, and the guy in the hat sitting near the campfire, and he's got a hand mic in his hand, and I'm looking down at all the different people. They've got TW antenna shirts on and everything, and I was like, well, where's the antenna? And then it dawned on me that it was right in front of my face, and I was looking for it, and I didn't even see it. So it hides well. And, of course, you folks had to move it. You moved it over to a booth next where there was a bright yellow heinous background, and this black antenna stood out at that point. But you almost had to do something like that in order to make it visible.
That's exactly correct. We had people looking for where is the antenna, and we said, there it is. So we moved it so people could, when they'd come to the booth, they'd initially see it. And also, as we moved it over, people were able to walk around it and really get a good look at it and touch it and feel it. So that's a true story. We had to do that. Ted, I do want to say this about stealth. A lot of people listening to your radio show cannot comprehend what some hams have to go through to be able to set up even a modest station. I mean, folks that live in urban areas, in restricted covenant subdivisions, they can't have any kind of antenna in their yard. The neighbors, I guess I'd call them the homeowners association Nazis, go in and they find these people. They give them grief, and they really suffer by not being able to have an antenna. And our antenna has barely been we've had several guys write us, and their homeowner association don't have a problem with this antenna. They can set it out in a common area, move it in and out, or they can set it on their balcony, on their patio, and it works. A lot of folks are hanging them in the attic. We do not recommend putting this antenna in the attic because that's not the optimal space. But we have several people who put them in the attic. They're working DX all over the world. And if you don't believe me, again, go to Eham and read the reviews. And these are actual purchasers of the TW2010 putting the thing in the attic and working the world with it at the bottom of the cycle. So I'm not going to boast and tell you that I've done that, but these are other guys that have put them in the attic, and they're working well for them.
Well, you know, I guess the thing of it is if you are able to set up like you're going to operate, and you can take this antenna, and even if your cables, even if you left the cables outside in an area, you can take that antenna outside, and in roughly, 5 minutes? If the cables were already run, how long would it take to set the TW2010 up from the time you unzip the bag?
Well, I was in Yellowstone Park about a month ago, about this time in June. We're now, a month later. And it was in the middle of a snowstorm, a freak snowstorm that hit that part of the country. And we were able, Ted, to get that thing set up in 5 minutes and taken down in 5 minutes. And I was on there various times, but on that particular occasion, I was on the air for about an hour and a half, and I worked 70 contacts on 17 meters. Now, if you work 17 meters in the middle of the week, 1, 2 o'clock in the afternoon local time, in these band conditions that we're experiencing, that's a lot of contacts on 17 meters in a short period of time. We put it up, we took it down, 5 minutes on either side. And I had a blast, quite frankly. I really enjoyed it.
Well, I guess what I was saying is for people who are restricted and you're in an area where you just can't have an antenna, you can set this thing up and take it down, set it up, take it down, set it up, take it down. There was a process you can go through. And it's not a hassle. It's not a real big deal to have to go through. Because I watched my son David set the TW2010 up, and he had it. I mean, this is like from the box, okay? From the box, unpacked it, put it together, and up it went. So if you were to just fold it down to, the minimal size, and then carry it inside the house, and if you have a little spot you can put it, where you don't have to, break it completely down or put it into the zipper bag.
It depends on your house. Let me say this. From the bottom of the structure to the top of the very tip top, I believe is 6 foot and 10 inches tall. So depending on, if it's on a balcony, whether you have a roof over the balcony or not, that needs it. And all this information is downloadable from the website. There's a PDF file of the owner's manual. It's got dimensions in it. But it would be possible just to fold the arms up, fold the legs up, and move it in and set it in the corner of a room, or just set it on your patio or your balcony. Ted, if you take it from and put it in the bag, there's three pieces. There's a center section that has a switching array on it. There's a top section and bottom section, which are like giant T's. You put the top section on, you spin two thumb screws. You put the bottom section on, you spin two thumb screws. You set it down in the quadrupod, you spin two more thumb screws. You hook on a feed line, coax feed line, take it off at a 45 degree angle, along with hooking on the control cable. You're ready to go. And somebody says, well, what about the 45-degree angle? Well, the natural hang on the feed line and the coax is at about 45 degrees. So you don't have to, put anything down in the yard or anything. It just actually falls off at a 45-degree. And you want that because you don't want the feed line and the control cable acting as a misaligned radial or counterpoise. So that's why we tell people to do that. But I'm telling you, it's 5 minutes. You can be literally on the air in 5 minutes, and you can hop from band to band in milliseconds.
Well, okay, let's compare this hobby to something else. Let's talk about amateur astronomy. Okay, right across the room here is a small telescope. Okay, in the other room, I have a 10-inch Dobsonian. Are you familiar with Dobsonian?
Yes.
Okay. Now, I would much rather put the TW2010 up outside. I'd rather grab the TW2010, go outside, unfold it and set it on the quadrupod, the quadruped, which, what's proper?
Quadrupod.
Okay. I'd rather set it on the quadrupod than I would to carry that 10-inch Dobsonian outside. And yet amateur astronomers don't think anything of taking these size telescopes out in the yard. Some people have permanent pedestals, you know, they can mount them on. Now, fortunately, the neighborhood Gestapo has not ever outruled telescopes. They haven't said you can't have a telescope, you know. Of course, I guess maybe if you put an observatory in your backyard, the little dome, they probably wouldn't like that. But it's easy. In other words, it's easier than packing a telescope outside.
It's easier than packing a digital camera on a tripod that has extendable legs. If I got in a race with you, Ted, and you said, I'm going to set up my Nikon D80 camera on this tripod, and I'm going to get it at a height where I can shoot standing up, and you got to mount the camera, you've got to extend the legs and go through that exercise, I'll be talking on the radio before you're snapping pictures.
Well, you know, you think about this. You've got the whole antenna system there, and you know, if you're on a trip, if you have a cottage somewhere away from home, a second home, or if you happen to live in two different places, and there's a surprising number of folks today that commute to another location where they have to be. You know, even an apartment balcony is probably the perfect place that you could picture the 2010 in operation, where you maybe wouldn't want to leave it up there. You know, you might want to take it down at night. You may want to bring it inside. You may not want to have the thing sitting on the balcony all night long. People would think that you're contacting outer space, or you have some sort of connections with the planet. You know, I just read something the other day. This is interesting. Do you know that Hiram Percy Maxim believed that Mars was inhabited?
Really?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yes. Matter of fact, I sent you an email on that. He believed Mars was inhabited, and there is an award sitting at ARRL headquarters. It's a cup. It's like a cup. And that award was designed for the first radio amateur that contacted Mars. They were going to win that cup.
I want them to do it, and if they do it, I'll give them an award if they do it on a TW2010.
Well, no, I mean, I guess what I'm saying is that really shows, to me, that shows ingenuity and it shows imagination. And these are all the things that ham radio is all about, ingenuity and imagination. And I guess that's why I was kind of drawn to this antenna, because we have so many new folks that are getting into the hobby, and a lot of them have technician licenses. Okay, now with the technician, you can work CW on the 15-meter band. You can work CW, obviously. You've got phone privileges on the 10-meter band. You can talk on 10. So this is a perfect technician antenna, because it also works on 2 meters and on 440. There's not, and I'm not talking down on 6 meters, don't get me wrong, but there's not that many people on 6 meters. 6 meters is kind of something that you get into after you acquire a taste for talking on 2 and on 70 meters, 77 centimeters. I'll get it out here. You kind of acquire a taste for talking, and then you want to try your hand at 6, and you want to try your hand on some of the other bands, you know, but the 2010 gets you on the air. It gets you, I mean, so you have a 2-meter antenna. I'll just ask off the cuff, how do you think the 2010 would perform on 2 meters on a balcony? Now, that's kind of a loaded question, because the person obviously using it on the balcony, whatever antenna they chose, they'd have to mount it on a balcony. So I'm curious. Have you tried it in that kind of a?
Well, the time I referenced when I discovered it would work, 2-meter and 70-centimeter broadbanded on both of those frequencies, I was actually in a hotel in Orlando, Florida, that had a balcony, and I set it up actually to try to work back to Tennessee on 10-meter on some E-skip, and then just generally shake it down on HF to see what it would do. And I did do a little around gray line, but as you well know, the HF bands, at least those 10 through 20 meter, except for maybe a little E-skip on 10, right now they tend to close after sundown, a little after sundown. So I was playing around with the thing, Ted, and actually moved, it was on 897D, moved over to the VHF port, And my contacts, hitting the repeaters and working the 2-meter simplex and 70-centimeter repeaters, was from a balcony in a hotel. It worked well, and you know, I DX'd from that same balcony. I would say the more open the balcony is, the better. If you don't have a roof over it, obviously you're going to have some issues there with it kind of being in a cage. If you're in a pillbox with a concrete balcony, and you've got you're surrounded on three sides, and then you have a concrete roof over you, which the ceiling, which is the floor of the balcony above you, and you've only got one open space, that's not going to perform as well as the more open the balcony is. But it works well, and I don't believe on 2 meters and 70 centimeters that you'd be disappointed if you want to be vertically polarized. Now, I tested it on 2-meter sideband and 70 centimeter sideband, didn't make contacts on that. My distance contacts were on repeaters and on FM simplex. But I'm going to, you know, next time they have a contest, I'm going to get on there and see how I do on sideband. But as you well know, VHF and UHF, polarization means a lot. And it may not do well on sideband given the polarization being vertical.
Well, folks that have the 2010s that are listening, this will be an interesting test to put your 2010 on 2 meters and on 440 and test it out. I think, like an FM broadcast, I think the thing probably exhibits vertical and horizontal polarization at the same time. That's just my opinion.
It may be like the old, if you remember the old egg beater antenna that's kind of omni and even a little bit circular. I have not explored that, so there'll be somebody out there hear this broadcast, and they'll go try it, and I'm sure they'll drop us a card, send us an email, and let us know. Let me mention one thing that I really think is a great way to use the TW2010. The bands have been so bad, Ted, I just removed my HF rig from my car. It was more trouble than it was worth with the big antenna at the bottom of the cycle. But I take the TW2010 with me when I go on a trip. I carry it like a piece of luggage. It's got more frequent flyer miles than just about anybody in the company except me. And the thing goes everywhere, and I'll put it in a rental car, and I'll go somewhere, and I'll stop somewhere, and I'll set that thing up, and I work stations. We were at Yellowstone Park. We were down at Jackson Hole, Wyoming, at Grand Teton Park. I've been down in Florida at the various parks by the seashore. I'll go on picnic, and my family will play, kids will play on the playground, and I'll set that thing up and absolutely enjoy myself. And it gives me an opportunity to get out, enjoy the outdoors, and go portable without the hassle of having to basically build a station from the ground up. I mean, I'm about talking. I want to talk to people. I want to make the contacts, and I don't want a lot of hassle. And I really enjoy using the TW2010 portable, Ted. These guys that have the antenna, and we're coming out with a backpacker version that doesn't require the controller. You manually change the bands, and that's a lot of fun to do that because you're right there with the antenna. So I think you're missing some really, really good opportunity for family activity and seeing nature and outdoors if you just stay home and use your TW2010 at home. Put it in a travel bag, go somewhere, enjoy being outside, particularly in good weather, and see what you can do. You'll be surprised and excited as what that thing will do when you're out there in the outdoors working these stations.
Well, you know, the other thing to consider, too, on the other side of that coin, and that is a lot of folks are pulling back on the travel because of the gas prices. And there may be those folks that are sitting there saying to themselves, you know, I want to get a ham license, or they have the technician license, and I'd upgrade, but there's really nowhere for me to put an antenna up. I just, you know, and but now, you know, if you're backing off on travel, if you're saying I'm going to stay home, I'm not going out on the road, I'm going to stay home, Now is the time to take advantage of something like that. Get the 2010 and put it up on the balcony, put it in the backyard, or wherever you can, wherever you got room for it, and which it doesn't take up a lot of room. But and then you don't have the, I gotta say, you don't have the excuse. There isn't the obstacle of, I can't find anywhere to put an antenna. Why should I upgrade my license? Because if I get a general ticket, I've got nowhere to put a 20-meter beam. I can't put up a 20-meter dipole or even a 20-meter vertical in my backyard because of regulations. And so a lot of folks, and I've talked to a number of people, said there's no point in upgrading my license because I have nowhere to put an antenna to operate on the HF bands. And, of course, this solves that problem.
Let me challenge your listeners to do this. If they really, really want to work DX, forget about the big, long monoband, long John antennas and the tires and the rotors and all that. Do this. Get you a 2010. Decide you're going to do a portable setup. Go out in the middle of nowhere, by the ocean, you know. Gordon West talked about that's where he likes to set up and likes to work QRP from the sandy beach and right there on the ocean. Do it that way. Get on the top of a mountain. Go find a place where there's no noise. There is no QRN what to be found. Take a 2010. Get out there in the middle of nowhere, and you sit and listen for those exotic DX stations. And when they come in at 2 and 3 on the meter, 2 and 3 S units, and everybody else has got noise at the 2 and 3 level, you'll be there with your 2010 and your radio, and you can work them. When the boys at home with all the electrical noise and all the interference and the atmospheric noise on those big antennas can't hear them. Now, that is a secret that I just shared with your listeners. I worked 300 DX entities in a year, and over half of those were worked setting just like I told you. It is a joy to sit there and work these exotic stations when they come in, these islands all over the world, places that have very few ham operators, to sit there and talk to them, and you can hear them and nobody else can hear them. Now, to me, that's true DXing. But, and you enjoy it because you're out there in nature. You see the trees. You know, you see the clouds. You've got your family with you. I promote using the antenna as stealth and putting it in your house and everything. But you really, really miss a good time when you limit yourself just to having the antenna there at the home QTH, Ted. I promise you do.
Well, you know, there's another thing too. I think that a new setting, a new surroundings. If you're set up somewhere, especially if you're set up somewhere that's somewhat picturesque, you know, and you're relaxed, you're away from home, you're away from the grind, and now you've got your radio with you and you've got an antenna, and you can actually sit there and think about working DX. But let me go down this road. There's a lot of new hams, a lot of people. If you've just got your ticket. And you're thinking to yourself, well, you know, a lot of people come out of Citizens Band. You know, a lot of ex-CBers have become hams. But some of them may not be quite familiar as to how to go about working DX. Or some folks are afraid of it. They're afraid to jump in there. They're afraid to get right in the middle of the pileup or they hear some station, and they hear that station way off, they're a bit afraid to actually call the guy because his call letters sound strange. They don't really know if they heard the call sign right to start with. You know, it sounds pretty strange to them. I think the TW2010 and getting out away from home someplace at a park or you know, any location that you'd want to pick is the perfect way to sit down and relax and practice your talents in working DX on the radio. Because once again, it's like you said, you've removed the mechanics. You don't have to worry about setting up the antenna. You don't have to worry about tuning something up. You know, you just simply plug it into the radio and take off and run at the same time. But now, what do you think about that? I mean, have you ever thought, when you first started into amateur radio, were you not intimidated by DX stations?
I was very intimidated by pileups, Ted. I didn't understand why they would single out one station and talk to that station and not talk to another. Because most DX, even on special events that's not DX, just special events that happen every weekend that somebody's sponsoring, there'll be usually a pile up of anywhere from a half a dozen to several dozen people in there trying to contact that station. And you wonder, well, why is he going to contact me? I mean, why is he going to pick me out of the pile up? And I'd like to tell you that if you're on a TW2010, they're always going to pull you out because you're the loudest. But that's not true. Sometimes you'll be the loudest, and sometimes you won't be the loudest. It depends on the guy on the other end. Sometimes he picks out the first station he hears. Sometimes it's the last station he hears. Sometimes if he hears portable, well, I'm going to talk to that portable station. Some people work QRP. They say QRP. Some people, when they give their call, they say mobile. So it's whatever's in the mind of the DXer as to who he wants to talk to. Sometimes if he hears something from a certain call sign district, he's looking for that. They keep up a lot of the foreign stations with CQ zones, and they may need a zone 4, a zone 5. I can't tell you that there's any magic to it, but let me say this, Ted. Let me do a 180 on and say, why not become the DX station? Now, that kind of sounds arrogant, but you'll be surprised that if you're in a national park somewhere and you're set up like I was in Yellowstone, I had pileup going out there. Folks that had actually been to Yellowstone, I wanted to hear about the weather in Yellowstone or where I was at in Yellowstone, looking at the map. They wanted to talk to me. I was on the TW2010. There's nothing special to my call sign. N4ECW, November 4 Echo, Charlie Whiskey, a portable Yellowstone Park. I had a pileup going like I was a rare DX station. I felt like I was important. I was on some rare island or some political entity, maybe North Korea, that you never hardly ever hear anybody coming out of. Or maybe I was in Indonesia, and the band had been closed so long, very few people coming out of Indonesia into North America. But I felt like rare DX myself in being able to work. And I was working, you know, North American stations. I'm not going to tell you that I was working the world because the band, I think the Solar Flux that day was like 64. It was terrible. But I felt like I was DX. So you can get it both ways. You can get the DX you're trying to contact, and you can also, if you're set up portable, you can have folks that want to talk to you and talk about where you're at. I'm in DeSoto Park in Florida. Well, people have been to DeSoto Park. It's one of the most beautiful beaches in the world. It's found at DeSoto National Park there in Florida. Well, I will happen to be set up in Grand Teton National Park. People wanted to talk to me. Go out, activate national parks, activate islands, activate the grid squares that people don't have a lot. You know, most people, if they've been hams a long time, they've worked all states. And most hams that have been around a long time, Ted, they've got the DXCC. They've worked 100 countries. But set up in a national park or set up in a special place, get on there and CQ and let them come back, and you'll be surprised how many people will come back to you.
Friends of ours up in Saginaw, Michigan, inside of Saginaw, actually inside the city limits, there's a little island that runs that's just out in the middle of the river, and they call it Ojibwe Island. And those guys would get on the air as a spoof and say, you know, our QTH is Ojibwe Island. And they were there, and they had a pileup because people thought they were working some rare, rare island. They
right.
Can't even find it on the map, you know. So you're right. That's a good thing. You know something else? There's a lot of hams that came out of Citizens Band. And I know when I was real young, I started off with a Citizens Band radio. Matter of fact, I had a Citiphone SS and a couple other old Knight 2590s. Anybody remember that out there? Anyways, but today I talk to a lot of hams and say, a lot of them will say, well, you know, I really wish I had. I mean, I there's times I wish I had a CB radio in the house just to listen for certain types of things that go on. You don't know, you know, especially if you're in an emergency situation. It's handy to be able to hear that. You can hear it on your ham rig, but you can't necessarily transmit on it. But the big problem I hear guys saying, but I don't have a spot for a CB antenna on my roof. I've got my dipoles up. I've got a beam antenna. I have a vertical. I have whatever. I got no place to put a CB antenna. And the TW2010, if it's up in the air a little ways, makes an excellent citizens band antenna for hams that want to hook the CB rig up and monitor the local CB channels. And I live real close to I-40, so I like to listen sometimes just to hear, especially if the traffic's just jammed up and you kind of wonder what's going on. You can tune in there and hear it. So that's another option for the fellows that have come out of Citizens Band. I'm sure there's nobody really has a desire to get back on and actually operate on Citizens Band, but there may be some that do. I mean, there's some friendly communities with people that operate on Citizens Band, but if you would like that opportunity to be able to say, okay, I can at least hook the CB rig up and put it on the air if I have to, the TW2010 works really well. Now, tell us about that, because on 10 meters, it in the 10-meter position, it's flat as a pancake, is it not?
It really is. The antenna, without any of the switching network, is a very broad-banded 10-meter antenna. I mean, it covers from somewhere in the high 25 megahertz range all the way up to 30 with really, if you just had the structure. In fact, we had to adjust the structure just a little bit to make it move up into the FM part of the band, because just by its very nature for all the other bands, it was a little low, so we had to change the structure just a little bit so the folks that wanted to work 10-meter FM up, 29.7 megahertz in that range could do it without any tuning adjustments. But it works down into the CB band. I mean, it covers from a channel 1 up to a channel 40 and beyond, for monitoring purposes beyond channel 40. We don't advertise that, Ted, but yes, you put it up, you can monitor the Citizens Band, or you can transmit through the antenna onto the Citizens Band if you have the right equipment and use the, I think it's 4 watts now is the limit in the U.S. on that transmission, but it'll work there. You also would say it works on MERS, the 2-watt MURS frequency that they have, and with what we found out on the on our use of it on the 440, it would be working your GMRS and FRS frequencies now, because that's where they are. They're in that 70 centimeter band, so you would be able to work all of those non-licensed frequencies. And we would recommend that folks doing that use the right amount of power. And I think on GMRS, you have to have a license for that. So we don't advertise that as being a feature, but it's there. And hams are going to find this out as they try things and do things. They're going to find out this and other things that we haven't even discovered yet about this antenna.
Oh, yeah, as time goes on. But the call, what I was going to say, the call for Citizens Band, I know in driving across town sometimes I look up and I notice an absence of Citizens Band antennas. There used to be Super Magnums and CLR2s and things like that, and you'll see those occasionally on a roof somewhere, a really old CLR2 sitting there, and it's got to be rusted out and probably the feed line gone on it. But for those people who I think during emergency situations, having a Citizens Band radio, an actual 5-watt Citizens Band radio connected, to something like a TW2010, or the ability to switch it onto that antenna through a coax switch as an additional rig, could be a very valuable tool.
And it is. And let me point this out to you, Ted. I don't know if we've actually talked about this on the air before, but there are shortwave broadcast stations in between some of the bands that the TW 2010 covers, And it's a very good receive antenna on those frequencies. You know, we worry about SWR and when we are and resonance when we're talking about transmitting. And those are important on receive, but maybe a little less important on receive than on transmit. But I listen to shortwave broadcasts all the time using my TW2010. So it's a if it would work 6 meter, I would tell you it was the perfect antenna. But it's not that great on 6, but everything else we've talked about, it's good on. It really is. And I would tell folks, hook up your shortwave receiver on it and listen and see what you hear. You'll find out it's very, very quiet.
Well, that was another thing I was going to bring up about the TW2010, and that is its ability somehow to reject man-made noise. I know I talked to one fellow, and he said, well, on my dipole, you know, I can hook up the dipole, and I'm obviously the S meter reads, you know, fuller or charges up higher on the dipole, but the amount of noise coming in is horrendous. You go to the 2010, and all of a sudden it's so quiet. Matter of fact, tuning up and down the band, there's been times I wondered if the antenna was actually connected, and then I would happen on a signal, and the signal would be fine. There'd be nothing wrong. It's just that I wasn't hearing all the popping and the cracking and the sizzling that I was getting off of off the dipole antenna. Is that something you've noticed at all?
It is, and it's folks who use verticals will be the first to notice it, as opposed to people who use the wire antennas. If you're accustomed to using the normal vertical, the number one complaint hams will have about the typical vertical is it's noisy. Well, if you put a TW2010 up beside the typical vertical antenna, the first thing you're going to notice is, wow, it's quiet. But then when you put it up against the wire dipole, it's quiet too. Not as quiet as compared to the normal vertical, but it's very quiet compared to that. But when you compare it to the wire dipole strung in the trees horizontally, it's very quiet. I don't have a problem with that. I don't like noise. I mean, I like the ease of listening. And if you can't hear them, you can't work them. And I don't use preamps because that, to me, elevates the noise. And I don't have to, but I think that's something that you have to come to terms with, Ted, on TW2010 is you may have one S unit less on the meter, but you're going to hear the person a whole lot better. So that's just, you know, operating habits, you know, what you're used to and what you're going to get used to. But haven't had any complaints on that, but have had people notice the difference.
Well, you know, I've noticed the difference in it immediately when we hooked it up because, like I said, there's been times I've fired up the radio and I said, wait a minute, is the antenna connected? You know, and I keep tuning up, down, you know, up or down, and all of a sudden there's a signal. You know, well, I'm curious about this, and I'd switch over to the dipole, and the signal would come up a bit on the S meter, but then the noise would get loud enough to where I could not copy what the person was saying. In other words, they were right in the noise. I go back to the 2010, and I could hear them clear. I could hear them just as clear as a bell.
This past Sunday, we worked a special event from my home shack, and we were on 20 meters. I had a 20-meter G5RV available. I had a Windham, an off-center fed Carolina Windham. I had a mini beam, the one that they make up in Canada. I believe it's TGM Enterprises make it. I have an MQ26 mini beam. It's similar to what the guys in Iraq are running, the Cushcraft MA5B. It's similar to that. And I had the TW2010. I checked the noise level on all the other antennas, and it was about an S unit higher on the other antennas than on the TW2010. But I could have used any antenna I chose to use, but I used the TW2010 because it was so much more pleasing to the ear, Ted. And let me say this. First and foremost, I'm a ham operator. I mean, I like to make contacts, and believe me, if the Carolina Windham would have been better on that particular day under the conditions, I'd have been talking to him on the Windham. If the little beam had been the best thing, I would have talked to him on the beam. But on that occasion, the TW2010, the incoming signals were what I told you. The noise was less. The atmospheric noise, the non-man-made noise, the QRN, was such that I chose the TW2010. And we worked – I personally worked the thing a couple hours and made 105 contacts on 20 meters. And I think the solar flux that day was about 65. So it wasn't a very good day to make contacts.
Things weren't running in your favor that way.
They really weren't, and I only heard a couple of stations I couldn't work, but had a ball. Had a real good time and enjoyed it. But I promise you, if I'd have worked so many on TW2010 and so many on a different antenna, I would have told you the results, because most hams have more than one antenna. I mean, a lot of hams just have one antenna because of where they live and the restrictions and everything. A lot of hams have several antennas, and we're all addicted to having a little bit of wire antenna in the trees. We can't get away from that. So I'm not expecting somebody to just buy my antenna, and that's the only antenna they ever use. But I will tell you, if you buy my antenna and it don't suit you, you don't like it, box it up, pay the shipping, send it back to me, and I'll give you money back. And how many other antenna companies will tell you that?
I don't know of any. There may be somebody
hadn't
out
had
there.
Any sent, hadn't had any sent back yet. We have several hundred out there. We're shipping out scores, every week. I can't tell you we send out hundreds a week. But we send out scores every week, and I've yet to have anybody wanting to send the antenna back.
Well, let me ask this question. If you get one of the antennas and you want to get further away from the antenna, you can always use more coax. You can always add coax on. But what about the control cable?
Okay. I'm not picking on folks about their operating practices, because I'm the world's worst appliance operator. That's what they call guys like me. I don't want to do anything, Ted. I just want to hook the radio up. In fact, if I could find somebody to set the station up for me, I'd just sit down behind the mic and start working contacts. But you have to do a little more than that. If you don't want to do anything, then you get the coax the length you want. We have a 65.5-foot control cable. We have an extension cable and adapter you can get. But when we designed this thing, we built it where inside the control box there's a screw block, 5-terminal screw block. Inside the switching array there is a 5-terminal screw block. You get 5-conductor rotor cable, or get 6-conductor rotor cable and just cut off, the yellow wire on one end and the yellow wire on the other end, and just use 5 colored wires. Hook one to one, hook the blue wire to one on the control box, blue wire to one to number one screw on the switching array, et cetera, and you can have a control cable up to about 225 feet long. We tell everybody 200 feet because after 200 feet, you start experiencing a voltage drop a little bit, and it does well up to 225. But go buy your rotor cable and do it that way, and don't even worry about buying an extension cable or an adapter from us. Hook it up yourself just like you would a rotor on a tower, and you can make it any length you want to. You can wind it and curl it, and it doesn't matter. And I believe that the rotor cable probably is, I haven't looked at the pricing, but I'd say 100-foot of rotor cable is cheaper than our 65.5-foot of extension cable. Now, right now, we're giving the extension cable, put it in with the antenna, and it's included in the package. Depending on what copper price does in the next year, it may eventually be an accessory, Ted. That's pure economics. But if I wanted more than 65.5 feet, I'd buy me some rotor cable from Gigaparts or R&L or HRO or AES. I'm giving all these free plugs on your show. Get whatever length you want and use that. It's already set up to do that.
Well, I wondered about that, because there may be the occasion where a person has got to not necessarily go a great distance out, but maybe down the drain spout, down to the end of the house, back in through a certain window, or if they're in an apartment complex, they may have to put the antenna somewhere away from the apartment, but in some place where they're going to have to route the wire up and down and around and through. And you can go through the wire pretty quick when you're pulling one of those things. So that's just strictly a thought there.
Let me mention one thing about the length while I have you. We recommend that people use 50 foot or more of coax. Sometimes, depending on what RF you get going and what you're around and everything, sometimes if you get below 50 feet, you start getting the feed line becoming resonant with the antenna. So to dodge those issues, we tell everybody, even if you don't need but 30 feet of coax, get you at least 50 feet of coax and use it, because sometimes out of testing a thing 1,000 times, once or twice we had a little weirdness on short pieces of coax. But you can use as long a coax as you want. I mean, that's, again, you look at RG8, you look at RG58, you see what your losses are, you see how much power that you plan on running, and make up your mind on that. But on the control cable, get you 100, 125, 150, 200 feet of rotor cable, screw it in the control box, screw it in to the switch box on those screw plates. We've even got a knockout plug on the back of the switching array box just for that. So you don't have to take off the connectors that are already there, Ted. Just pop that little rubber grommet out of there and run that rotor cable through there and hook it on, and you're good to go.
Okay, the other thing I wanted to ask you about, and we are shortly going to be running out of time here, what about power levels? People who are concerned about running, like, for example, AM phone. If you get on, say, the 20-meter band and you're an AM phone guy, what about running the full 400 watts to that thing?
Well, there's two issues here. Number one, if your antenna's tuned correctly, you're obviously you need to check SWR and make sure it's tuned correctly. Then you run more power than if you're in a part of the band that the antenna's not tuned for. On 20-meter, you got about 175 kilohertz of bandwidth. Now, you can set that down at the 14.050 or 14.070 and work PSK, CW up and down through there, or you can set it up into the general part of the phone band. Start it at 350, and you'll probably be able to go down and cover the whole general part of the phone band down to 14-25. Decide where you're going to work 20 meters, because on that one band, the antenna doesn't cover the whole band. On the rest of them, it covers the whole band. So assuming your antenna's in the right part of the band and it's tuned correctly, we tell folks you can run 1,200 watts PEP. In reality, you can run 1,500 watts PEP, but if we said it'll run full legal limit, somebody would run 2,500 watts or 2,000 watts just to see how much it would run. You know ham operators like I know ham operators. And also, there are parts of the world, there are places where your listeners are at, that it's legal to run 3,000 watts. So we set the specs at 1,200 watts PEP. I know folks that run legal limit and then some into it without problems. We tested with a 1,200-watt carrier when we built the thing and had no problem. So if you're running, you're running a Reedy, you're running CW, you're running AM phone, you're not going to get into trouble with me. You'll get in trouble with the FCC if you're North American ham before you get in trouble with the TW2010 antenna on how much power it'll carry. But I'm telling you, Ted, I get this question all the time, and I tell them, you don't need the power. You're not going to make that much difference in running legal limit versus 100 watts. People will not believe that. I mean, I promise you, you don't need an amplifier with this antenna. But people feel naked without an amplifier, so they got to run the juice through it. But you'll work as many stations on 100 watts as you will legal limit on these bands. Now, if you were on different bands, if you were down on 75 meter, 80 meter, maybe 40, but on the 20W2010, you don't need an amp. I'm going to say it again. You could use an amp, put the power to it, but it's unnecessary. You're creating splatter. You're not being a good ham, in my opinion, if you run legal limit on 2010 because you just don't need it.
All righty. Well, that's about all we've got time for today. And I appreciate you taking the time and talking with us about this, because I know there's folks out there that have just discovered this antenna. They're looking at it. They're saying, what is this thing? And, of course, the more we talk about it, the more they learn about it, the more they know about it. And they're going to feel easier about acquiring one. And when they get one, they're going to be happier with it because they're going to understand it a little bit more.
We've been seeing a lot of sales in the last few weeks going back and forth to Europe. We've sent antennas to Greece. We've sent them to Spain. We've sent them to Italy. So I think you're going to start hearing more European stations. We sent them to Great Britain. There's even reviews from a Great Britain station, Ham, that had an antenna and his experience. I think you're going to start hearing some DX stations coming back our way on the TW20 2010, Ted. So it's not just what we're doing in DX. It's what DX stations are going to be doing back this way with the 2010. We'll keep our eyes open for that.
And we haven't had any orders from Mars yet, though. That's the only thing.
No, but if we do that, the first order from Mars will be free. But I don't know who I'm going to get to deliver it. Maybe we can talk to NASA or somebody. But if we can get somebody to deliver it and they've got a valid address on Mars, we'll send them one free.
Well, you know that award still stands. At the ARRL headquarters, the first amateur that works Mars, there's a cup there that will belong to them as soon as they do it. So, and you know what? It'll probably happen someday. It more than likely will.
Probably will be on a UHF frequency or an SV HF frequency. I doubt it'll be on the frequencies that 2010's on, but who knows? We might find out that thing works well on 2.4 gigahertz.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your time, sir. You're going to join us again soon.
Thanks, Ted.
Thank you. That's going to do it for this week's QSO. Our guests have been Joel Kleinman, N1BKE, the managing editor of QST Magazine for the ARRL, and Dr. Michael Barrett, N4ECW, the owner of the TW Antenna Company. Brought to you by TW Antennas in Heil Sound. Join us next week, same time, same station for QSO.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hail at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, o'er the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming, and the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say does that star-spangled banner yet wave o'er the land and of the free.